Yes, the rain's holding a few people up, but I'd like to thank the elders for allowing this class to take place. I personally have benefited a great deal from it, and I hope you have. What I've studied here, going around and ask you to take it, an evaluation sheet of the class. Now, I realize that by the time this class makes, they're back there, Joel. If the elders decide that it is beneficial and the class is offered again, I may not have the strength and health to teach it or have much to do with it. You missed your cue. When I said that, you were supposed to go, oh, like you're disappointed. But I would like to see any improvements in the class that we can make. For instance, I've realized that I haven't used enough scripture, and there are more scriptures that can be used. I've reorganized some of the classes, trying to reduce some of the redundancy of the classes and all. And so if you can think of anything that would help to make this class better for us, if it's offered again somewhere down the line, please don't hesitate to put down any comments that you have, positive, negative, whatever. You can sign it if you want. Otherwise, you know, you don't have to sign it if you don't want to. If you just want to put something on there like Ken stinks, I'd prefer that you didn't sign it.
Hey, don't talk about me now.
I'm thinking about this one, Ken the less. At least put down the point that led you to that conclusion. But anyway, I'd like to see them back by the last class period, if you will. Anything that you can do to help make the class a little better. There are a couple more handouts that we're going to be referring to this morning. Did anybody not get a handout of the evaluation?
I got one.
Oh, okay. Anybody else need? And then here's another that we'll be referring to a little later in the class. And hopefully our class has been able to meet some of these goals here that we've looked at. We haven't gone over them every time. I don't know how we would have anything to do with making your own death real to you. You may have experienced something that has made you think about it, made you realize that you're not exempt from death, that your death is certainly going to come upon you at some time or another. And we have tried to talk about these ideas with a view to our own death, understanding the stages of grief. This lesson and the next two lessons will be getting more into helping other people in their grief and the loss that they may have. We're going to be talking about the bereavement that we can or will experience. And sometimes this bereavement will precede the death of the loved one. When that happens, it's possible to feel that loss long before that person, or at least a while before that person, actually dies. And this would be called anticipatory grief or anticipatory bereavement. And it has its dangers. For example, if you're mourning and if you're in grief prior to the actual death of that loved one, and if you work your way through it, maybe you no longer desire that relationship. You have severed that relationship in your mind. And it's not unknown for a spouse to abandon another in this kind of a situation. So we want to be careful about that, especially as we try to help other people and we may see people in their various stages of grief. Also, when we do that, if we work our way through grief before the actual death of the individual, that reduces the significance of the funeral. Well, a funeral is really for the living, not for the dead. It helps us to get together and to grieve together and to mourn together and to bring some kind of a closure. Even though at a funeral, you usually don't know what to say. You don't know what to do. There's really nothing you can say or do, either to respond to those that have come to help you grieve or if we go to help someone else. We need to be there for them. I'm sure each one of you has probably attended a funeral that may be attended by only four or five people. And there should have been a lot more than that, but people are uncomfortable. They don't know what to do, don't know what to say. Maybe it's not a very big family anyway. Maybe they have outlived most of their family and all of their friends, and it's really a sad situation. But whenever you see a funeral where there's a number of people, a large crowd, you can realize that that person was loved and that that person was supported, and their life somehow just seems to be more meaningful, even though in actuality it may not be more meaningful. But in our funerals, we don't know what to do. We don't know what to say. If we go and visit the individual later, we may not know how to talk with them. We may feel uncomfortable and not be able to communicate how we feel. Or we may not be able to help them. But one fellow said, and he had lost his wife suddenly, he said, "She's on my mind 24 hours a day." He said, "I know when you're around me, you don't want to talk about it. You're uncomfortable with it." He said, "Even I don't want to talk about it all the time. I don't want you to talk about it all the time." But he said, "I'm not forgetting about it. There's no way I can forget about it. You can't say anything that won't make me think of her." He said, "There are days," and this was just about a week or so after his wife had passed away, he said, "There are days when I laugh a little, and then I cry, and in a few minutes I might be laughing again. And when I'm laughing, she's on my mind. And when I'm crying, she's on my mind. And when I wake up in the middle of the night, she's on my mind." He said, don't think that I can ignore it. Don't think that you can say something that will take my mind off of it and make me forget about it. If you want to talk about her, that's fine. If you don't want to talk about her, that's fine also. But just please don't ignore or deny the fact that I had a wife, that she was very important to me. He said, "I can talk for 100 years and I can't tell you of the peace that's in my heart because of the happiness that she brought into my life, and then when she died, that she was a Christian." And he praised her for the home that she made, the secure environment that he could come home and get away from the world. He raised their children, the influence, the impact that she had on his life. He said that there was a plaque that she had for years, that Christ is a guest in our home. And that's the way she lives. And it brought him a great deal of comfort. But the important thing, I think, to take away from that is not to ignore it, not to be afraid to talk about it. If they don't want to talk about the loved one that's lost, you'll get the message. Let them be the one that changed the subject. Or if they want to bring up the subject, be willing to listen. You know, maybe you can share some humorous stories, some fond memories. Whenever we hurt, you know, we try whatever we can for comfort. Whenever we're in grief, that's a form of pain, and we're going to do whatever we need to for that comfort. And that's what we're going to be looking at a little bit this morning. Brother Hall?
My brother lost his son who was preaching in Canada just suddenly. And he said when people would come that many times they seemed to feel uncomfortable, not knowing what to say or do. And he said sometimes they would say something about our son and said, "We love that."
Mm-hmm.
And they had a little anecdote to tell or something that experience they had with him. He said, "That's exactly what we wanted to hear."
Right.
And so you don't, as you were saying very well, he was saying, don't ignore the subject. But speak about it, and speak about it, of course, in objective terms. You're not crying with it, but that's something they would like to hear.
I was talking to someone just a couple of weeks ago that had recently lost a close family member, and I asked her, I said, "Does it help or does it hurt when I or somebody else brings up that individual and want to talk about that individual?" And she said it helps, because that person is not forgotten. They were a significant part of the lives that they touched. And so even though you may not feel comfortable with it, I think we need to get past that so that we can be with other people and help them through that. One of these days, if you're not there, if you haven't experienced it, you're likely to. Thank you for bringing that up, because when we hurt, we're going to do whatever we can to find comfort. You ever smash your thumb with a hammer? What do you do? You know, people may think, well, that doesn't make any sense. Maybe you put it between your legs and hop around a few times. Maybe you put it in your mouth to do whatever you can to give yourself comfort. And so man is always going to do whatever they can to try to alleviate the pain. Man talked about his sister dying suddenly. She had grown up in the church. She and her husband had fallen away from the church. They had gotten to be very worldly. And when she passed away, it wasn't but about 2 weeks until he was out hitting the bars, trying to find companionship, trying to find another woman. And he ended up cutting the ties with his family, all kinds of problems, in his effort to be comforted, to find comfort. And so we've got our job cut out for us in trying to keep people maybe from that kind of a lifestyle as they seek to find comfort. Be sure that they can come to us, and we're going to at least listen. We may have the story to tell. We may have the fond memory to share with them. And so people are going to try anything that they can think of, maybe alcohol, drugs. Maybe they'll try to take care of their guilt with vengeance. Maybe a lawsuit, something like that. But it's all in vain. And our part in this is to help them to realize, to find the only answer is in Christ. 1 Thessalonians 4:13-14 says, "We do not want you to be uninformed, brethren, about those who are asleep, that you may not grieve as do the rest who have no hope. For if we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so God will bring with him those who have fallen asleep in Jesus." We have opportunity in a passage like this to comfort people. Ecclesiastes 12:13, that one verse tells us what life is all about. That it's to fear God, keep His commandments. But as we saw in our quick journey through Ecclesiastes, there's a whole lot that we can do to make life happier, to make life fulfilled, but that is the topic, to fear God. And if we do fear God and realize that God's way is best, we'll take care of it in the way that God has laid down for us. That'll give a life of happiness. It'll provide comfort for us. It'll provide comfort for others when they have lost a loved one. Now, we have question or comment before I go on. Hardly ever say that anymore, do I? We have seen Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's stages of grief, and there are people that disagree with it. They think there ought to be something different or worded differently or more stages in there than that. But this is easy to remember and generally applies in the denial and the anger and the bargaining and the depression and the acceptance there. And we may go through these stages to some extent for something as simple as a loss of a possession. You know, well, I can't believe I lost it. Where did I put it? Well, maybe I did lose it. Man, I'm going to have to go get another one or replace it in some way. If we have something, we can lose it. If we have nothing to lose, we don't have anything. But as we go through life, we're going to suffer various kinds of loss. One of them is that we might lose a parent, a sibling, a spouse, a child through death. Some of these are much more difficult to endure or to think of than others, but we might lose that same individual through a divorce. No, divorces bring about hard feelings, separation of families, and sometimes the relationships are completely destroyed. And I have heard women who have gone through a divorce say that a divorce is far worse than a death. Because in the death, maybe they don't choose to die and leave you, but in a divorce, that choice is made in some fashion. Another loss we might endure and end up grieving is we may lose a job. We might have to move from a neighborhood or move from a home that we love. And these things are going to cause us problems. We're going to have to work our way through these things. We might lose some kind of a physical ability, our sight, our hearing, a stroke or a disease might take something from us that we've always cherished, our strength and our health. We may suffer that kind of a loss. We might lose a limb, which would require a change of life, the way that we do a lot of things. Even losing a pet. We may think that's kind of insignificant here, but those little animals work their way into our heart. And some people are really grieved when they lose a pet. Or we might lose membership in a group that's close to. For some reason, they don't feel that we fit, especially if it's a close relationship like I see that we have here in the church. That would crush them. You see people fall away from the church because of things that have happened like this. Maybe they have been mistreated. Maybe they have been withdrawn from. Maybe there has been a relationship and they decide that they don't want anything to do with any more churches or perhaps even with God. Or maybe their goals are crushed. Their goals are made ineffective. Their dreams are crushed. And so these are things that we might suffer, things that we may I have to go through. And any of these things will, and many more of them, will cause a great deal of bereavement and mourning and grief. And even though we use those synonymously, they're really not the same. And bereavement literally means to take away from someone, to rob, to dispossess, and it usually implies the loss and unhappiness. Grief refers to the sorrow, the anger, the guilt, and confusion that may come when we suffer loss. Now, we might be bereaved without grieving. We might have some kind of a loss and we don't grieve over it. Now, we won't grieve unless there is a bereavement, but take an example. Let's say that you're estranged from one of your parents. Maybe you're very close to one of your parents, but the other parents you haven't seen in decades. There's been no communication. There's been no relationship. Nothing like that. And that estranged parent passes away. Now, you've been bereaved of that parent. You know, there's the loss. It's been taken away. But there's no grief because it's really just a stranger to you. We can see the difference there. And then mourning is the overt expression of grief. And this is influenced by our culture. Our culture is going to influence the way that we grieve, the things that we do, things that we go through. And I think many of us here have lived long enough to see that our culture surrounding death has changed. You know, the family no longer takes care of the person that's passed away. It used to be the family that would clean them and dress them and get them ready for the funeral. They were oftentimes kept in the home. The family took them out to the cemetery. Perhaps members of the family dug the graves. Family filled it in. And how many of you have filled in a grave? How many of you have dug a grave? How many of you have done any of these things? It's something that is passing in our culture. Some parts of our culture may more freely express the grief that they feel, and other parts may not express it very much at all. Keep a stiff upper lip. Be a man. Don't show your grief. Don't cry in front of others. Joyce?
Well, in some of the material that I found helpful in losing my husband, the point was brought out, and I have found to be very true, that grief is natural, normal, and necessary. And even you cannot not grieve. You have to grieve. It'll come out somehow in your life, and no two people grieve just alike. No two people go through the process even in the same order necessarily. And so you know, my thought is always, and I think you're bringing that out, that we need to be sensitive to where a person is in their grief, but not to try to make them feel like you should have been over it by now or something like that, because it's all different for everybody. And even when you might think you're past it, it can, some things can bring it back up again. At least, you know, temporary. You don't go on the same, you go on with life. But, you know, there's a lot in there that needs our sensitivity toward others that are grieving, whatever the cause. And one other thought I have, which probably has been brought out or will be brought out, that because it is hard to say things to people, and we can just be there for them and let them know we're sorry, I think it's awfully important to remember to say, not to say, I know how you feel. People mean well with so many things they say, and we should be gracious about it. But unless you've been through that specific type of loss, mm-hmm. you don't really have anywhere to say, I know how you feel, because you can't possibly, you know, like losing a child, for instance. Only someone else who's lost a child can really have a true sense of how that person feels.
Right. Those are good points, and yes, and that's what we're doing here, is trying to understand how we can help other people.
That's right.
And the next two lessons, we're going to be talking about what to say and what not to say, and I'm glad you brought that out. And
yeah,
so we're going to look at that in a little more depth. But so much of it is cultural. At funerals, most times I see men and ladies wearing black. But how much after the funeral is black worn as a sign of grieving? It used to be that the widow was expected to wear black for a year or whatever. Is that still something that's done? I don't notice it. I don't see it, and I do look for it. And as I've mentioned before, the idea of getting together for a viewing before the funeral is pretty new to me. I haven't been doing that very long. A friend of mine, when she lost her son, her grief was, she was inconsolable for 2 or 3 years. And finally, when she began putting herself back together, she told me that I was the only friend that she had that would sit and listen to her talk about her son. Said everybody avoided her. They didn't know what to say. They were uncomfortable around her grief. And that I would listen to her. I would let her cry. And that's all I could do. I'd never lost a child. I don't know how to feel or what to say. And there's not going to be anything I can do or say. In her grief, and as a part of her culture, they made basically a shrine out of his grave. I don't know how many thousands of dollars that they spent on a huge headstone and the things that went around it. And every time that boy's grave is not very far from my dad's grave. And every time I go to my dad's grave with my mom, well, I see that they have made some kind of addition until it is virtually a shrine and a park around that boy. And so I know that here 15 years later that her grief is still fresh. And can we condemn her? Can we say, get over it? I can't do that. And if you've lost a child, I'm sure you would say, there's no way to get over it. That's an unimaginable loss for me. And it would be one of the greatest losses that I could imagine. I think children are supposed to bury their parents, not the other way around. Miss Katie?
I found that when you surround yourself, you know, a good listener is always important to lose somebody. You don't know what to say, you're sick with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That confidence to a person.
Right.
And I've always had that kind of comfort around me when I lost my children. Because I remember Brother Poole being with me, with my daughter, and being with Brother Stuart Hill when I lost my other door. So always had someone there, whether they talked or not, but just sitting, listening. Just sitting with the person is a great call.
Mm-hmm. To listen is probably one of the greatest skills that we have. You know, God gave us two ears and one mouth, so to listen. And let me ask you, based on what Brother Sewell said, is it a help or a comfort or a big heartache if someone wants to talk about one of your daughters?
Well, it makes me feel good because they're in my heart.
Yeah.
And when someone talks about it, you know, it just lets me know that I wasn't the only one that loved them, you know. And I don't mind people talking to me about mine. I can talk to them openly myself. Because when you talk to somebody, that gets rid of a lot of grief, too.
Okay. Good. Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. Joe?
Oh, with my mom, my grandmother passed several years ago, and for about 10 years, I guess, every time I'd go home, my mom wanted to go to the cemetery. And I graciously took her every time. And now that she's to the point where she is 93 years old and bedridden and so forth, she doesn't talk about that too much. But sometimes I just bring up my grandmama and my mom, we talk about it with mama. And now I'm just trying to put myself in a position, sort of being away from there, to kind of figure out, you know, how do I prepare myself for that day when it comes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what she wants us to do is just try and take care of her as best we can now. And then when that time comes, it's not going to be a whole lot of grieving, I don't think. And having lost a sister and a brother this year, we kind of went through some grieving there, but everything was pretty joyous, was a film and so forth. And that was consoling to me as well as to my sisters. So now at this point in time, we talk about it. My sister occasionally, she was a very good cook, and we talk about this time of year how we miss her now. But it's just one of those things. I think you just try to prepare, but I don't know if you can.
No way to really do it. No. If you would take out your handout that is like a chart, and that is the result of a cultural study several years ago, and I don't know if some of those things are even applicable now, about 40 years old. But they interviewed people and tried to get it across a variety of cultures, and you could see the responses here. How important is it to wait to remarry? You see the greatest number there says 1 year. A lot of people felt like it'd be better to wait a year before you remarried. We talked about not wearing black. Most people there, you notice on that top line, feel that it's unimportant to wait. To return to work, most people think a week. Well, it takes a week to kind of get to a funeral and back, or to put a funeral together, or take care of some of the paperwork and the things that need to be done. And so waiting a week is not unreasonable, but look down there on a month. Pretty high numbers there for a month. And I think that is basically unheard of right now. Now, I had some friends in the Hispanic culture that a month was about right. And any holiday that came along, it would take a month. A death that would come along was a month. And, of course, these were students and their families and friends and all that had come up from Latin America, Mexico or Ecuador or wherever they were from. And so their values were just a little bit different. On the bottom part, how long, or is it important to wait before you start seeing other men and women? I was surprised at the number that said, well, it's not important. And I think we intellectualize that, yes, if we lose our spouse, it's all right, spiritually, I guess, to go out and get married the next day. the wisdom in that and the acceptability of that is way different. People think you ought to wait a while, and pretty high numbers or fairly high numbers on waiting 6 months. Now, I watched the church divide. It just basically split when a lady in the congregation lost her husband. She grieved, and she grieved hard, and she mourned, and she was a basket case for a couple of months. And she started putting her life back together, and after a few months, she started seeing a friend. And it wasn't romantic. She talked with me about it. But people in the congregation there, some of them, while they all recognized she had the right to see anybody she could, you know, legally, that had a right to be involved with her, get married if she wanted to, that she had the right to do that right away. But they were angry with her because she didn't wait a year like they thought she ought to wait. They didn't think that she should be seeing the particular fellow that she was seeing. So the church ended up splitting basically as a result of that. And so even though people will say, well, I know what the scriptures say, sometimes they put their own feelings ahead of that. But again, this is all cultural. There's a lot of people that do different things because that's cultural. That's what's expected of them. And especially as we go across the world and look at different communities and different tribes and religions and all, we're going to see a wide variety of mourning and grieving.
Ken, I'm not making this up, but wasn't there a 30-day period that the Israelites grieved for Moses?
Yes, for Aaron and for Moses, they grieved. And
the Egyptians mourned for 70 days for Jacob.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And I wonder about the benefits of that. Everybody get together, mourn hard, pour out all your grief, tell all your stories. If that might not be more healing and more cleansing and help you to move on with your life rather than piecemeal it out and take years to work through. I don't know. Sharon?
I think in some Jewish communities it's still a custom. They call it sitting, I don't know how to pronounce, Shiva, for 7 days, where the widow or the widower just sits in the home and the relatives and family come in and they just sit there with them for 7 days. And it's a very traditional kind of thing, but to help them get through the first 7 days. Also, I have an article that I clipped out many years ago, just in case, for widows. And one of the things it said was, it was really advisable not for either a widow or a widower to make any major decisions for 1 year. So don't decide to sell the house, don't decide to move, don't wait 1 year. Give yourself time to grieve and to work through things, and then you'll be in much better shape to make a wise decision.
When you're thinking more clearly, yeah, don't do anything that's irreversible. Yeah. Now I don't have to cover that point in a minute. But that's fine. Y'all don't feel like you need to keep your mouth shut. I enjoy the help. The other handout that I sent around is talking about the grief that you're going to feel, or that people will feel. This intense grief will produce physical symptoms. And a lot of times you think there's something wrong with you. Maybe you think you're going crazy. Maybe you think you're coming down with an illness when you're going through this. But in some instances, these grieving pangs don't occur right away. And maybe that's when you're going through the first few stages of grief, the denial, through the bargaining. But then when you begin to accept that the loved one has died, there's going to be distress. And there's going to be some somatic distress. You're going to feel it. It's going to manifest it in your body. There may be waves of grief that just wash over you. And they may last from 20 minutes to about an hour. You may perceive yourself as being without the appropriate feelings, or maybe without any feelings at all, and think that there's something wrong with you. There may be ongoing feelings of fatigue, tightness in the throat, choking, shortness of breath. a need for sighing. You know, what's wrong with me? Just an empty feeling in your stomach, a lack of muscular power. You don't have the strength to do anything. Maybe a loss of interest in things that you used to really be interested in. And that goes back to what was important in your life may still be important. Don't make any changes. That goes to what Cherry was saying. Don't make any changes that can't be reversed. Now, if you want to have a garage sale, go ahead. If there's furniture there, you know, that's no big deal. If you even want to trade cars, that's not irreversible. But to do things like to sell your home or to remarry, something like that, they're basically irreversible. You may regret it. You may endure an appetite loss. I remember when a very dear friend of mine died. When I'm stressed, I don't eat. And this fellow, he was as close to a brother in the flesh, and certainly a brother in the Lord. He passed away suddenly, and the week of his funeral, I lost 10 pounds. I don't recommend it, but you know, you're going to go through things like that. Heart palpitations, insomnia, the inability to organize things or activities. You're just not going to be able to concentrate. You may blame yourself for a lot of the things that went on, even the death. Preoccupation with images of the person that's died. Maybe you'll catch a glimpse of a stranger in the store and it looks like that loved one. And you're so tempted to go up to them, you know, track them down because, yeah, he really didn't die. That's him. I know it's got to be him. Or catch a glimpse of a movement or imagine it out of the corner of your eye and think that he or she is there. There will be restlessness may go along with that insomnia, headaches, diarrhea, irritability, guilt, hostility toward others, hyperactivity. These things may be intense enough to be considered depression. And people have reported that they feel like they're just going crazy. And really, they're not going crazy. They're going normal. They are grieving through the process. They're doing what they need to, like Janet brought out a while ago. And in complicating all of these things may be a feeling of relief if that person has been sick for a long time. They're not in pain anymore. The effort and the work and the expense and all of these things are no longer a consideration, and you may feel guilty as a result of that. And because of the guilt, there may be anger against others, which would precipitate more guilt. Now, a common occurrence, and some of you have touched on it, is to go over, even repeatedly, the events that led up to the death. And people will share their stories and share what happened. And he said this, and he did that, and I know that she wanted this, and we were visiting one day, and she said that. And we share insights. I think this is probably a healing thing. It's a part of a healing process. Over in Acts chapter 9, verse 39, won't turn over there now because of the time, but over there, they were mourning Dorcas. And they were bringing out and showing and sharing the things that she had made, the good works that she had done. They were remembering her. They were talking about her. Maybe telling funny stories, remembering humorous events. But then over time, after you feel like you're suffocating, you feel like you're never going to get through this. But after about 2 weeks, these symptoms that's on that page began to lessen a little bit. Eventually, you'll notice it. You won't notice it right away, and you may not notice any change from day to day, but eventually they'll lessen. They'll be experienced only when there's a strong reminder. Maybe somebody says something, or it could be triggered by a smell of some kind, a perfume, a cologne, or an anniversary, a birthday party, a family gathering, might bring back waves of grief. But gradually, you'll get through it. You'll be able to put your life back together. And yet, vestiges are likely to reoccur for years, and perhaps all your life, coming up when you don't expect it. Because when someone dies, they're the hole in our lives. And one thing that Joyce brought out is there's really no right way or wrong way to grieve. We're going to do what we feel like we have to. We're going to do the thing that we think is going to comfort us. And so when you find somebody that is grieving intensely and in a way that you don't understand, don't be judgmental. Listen. Be willing to talk with them about it. Be willing to ask them about it. You might be able to guide them into a better way and help them to realize that what they're going through is normal. And as friends, it's usually not our place to give advice, but to just listen and try to understand them without judging. If we didn't grieve like this when somebody died, we didn't have much of a relationship. We didn't suffer much of a loss. There wasn't anything there for us to lament. But God made you and me to have very deep feelings. And when we have those deep feelings, we need to accept the fact that we need to grieve. And go ahead and do it at the proper time. Ecclesiastes 3:4 says, there is a time to weep, and there is a time to mourn. And the appropriate time is when our loved ones are gathered around us to help us to do it, to comfort us in that. If we try to be a man, if we try to not let it affect us, if we try to be strong, someday, somewhere, that grief is going to make itself known. And it may do it in relationships that we destroy or that we damage. If we hang on to that grief for a year or 2 years before we finally succumb to it, people aren't going to understand. They've already gathered for us to express our sorrow, and now we're trying to do it out of time and out of place. They won't understand. But we still have to go through it, and we'll probably go through it alone. So God put us together with this need and with this ability to cope with our lives, to bear burdens. And in our next two lessons, we're going to be talking about helping other people to bear the burden, to weep with them that weep, things to say, things not to say. Thank you.